Chef D. Veronica from the Democrat and Chronicle sitting in for Soccer Sam. This is Word on the Street, our summer show that's going to be replaced by the Canandaigua National Bank and Trust High School Sports Show in about a month, starting our 14th year of that here. But we're doing this summer, interviewing different people in the Rochester area, and I'm very excited to have on with me the man who founded the program that I graduated from at St. John Fisher in communications journalism. Now it's called Media and Communication. His name is Tom Proietti. Let me get this right. The resident scholar in media at St. John Fisher College, founder of the program, and also a professor emeritus of communications at Monroe Community College. Tom, welcome.
Great to be here, Jeff. It's fantastic. You know what? Every time I come up here, I love the view.
It's great. It really, Rochester looks
really
cool.
I may do the Park Ave Fest from here today.
16th floor downtown. And also with us is an associate professor at St. John Fisher, Todd Sedano. He is an expert in television history, teaches classes in video production and media studies, a New Jersey native, and this will get people to listen. Ready? Because I want to talk about this right off the bat. You know, you learn things over the years. You got to hook them quick, right?
The hook.
You were on The Sopranos.
I was.
You were a stand-in for Paulie Walnuts? No, what did you do?
Who told you that? No.
What did you do?
I was an extra at the Bada Bing, which is actually called Satin Dolls in Lodi, New Jersey.
I didn't know it's called Satin Dolls.
He's such a star. It's a good thing you're tenured now.
Yeah, and you actually say this now,
if we,
right?
If we knew this about the Bada Bing before the tenure vote, yeah. No chance.
2 years ago, I would have said, I think
no
my
chance.
Mic's not working.
He's only revealed
2 years
since,
ago, I would have mentioned, right? My mic's not working.
Well, that's right. Amazing. And yeah. You're from Jersey, so that's even you have.
I'm from
such
Jersey, but I don't have the accent anymore, Jeff. It's gone.
Are you married?
No, I'm not.
You should use that every time you meet a woman. I was on Sopranos.
The Jersey accent? Oh.
Oh no, the Sopranos thing, not the Jersey.
Oh, okay.
Accent. I don't detect an accent.
Thank you. That's the nicest thing you've said to me in all the minutes we've known each other.
So we were going to talk about media, where it was, where it is, where it's going. Tom, when you started the department at Fisher 50 years ago? How many years
it's
ago?
Close to that, yeah.
Almost.
It's 1968.
Okay.
1968, we actually started exploring, teaching the first classes, and it took until 1976 that we were officially sanctioned completely by the state of New York. We gave some minors in the program before that. But, you know, it took a while, a couple of years, to put the program together, get everybody on board, get everyone to agree that we should have a major. And I have to tell you, by the way, 1968, St. John Fisher College was an all-male Catholic college, mostly students from McQuaid and Aquinas, and a few from other places around New York State. But they were all Catholic school students, males in shirts and ties and sport coats. You weren't allowed to take your sport coat off. You couldn't pull your tie down. And it was a much, much different place than the place you see today. So, and it was also kind of rigid in the classical study tradition. So bringing on something like communication and journalism, as we did, was considered somewhat radical. We had a lot of enemies.
How
on the
old
faculty.
Were you when that happened?
I was 22 when we started.
Okay, so that. But so
I was a kid.
If you worked in other capacity, I know you worked in TV and,
yep.
And news. You know, but you did that after starting the department.
No, actually, I started working
a while.
At 17 years old. I was working in the sports department at the Democrat and Chronicle, and I worked as a. We used to call them then. Todd and I were just talking about this copy boy. Today they're editorial assistants.
Sure.
I don't think you even have editorial assistants.
We do.
You still
we
do.
We do have a few, yeah.
But we call them copy boys. I worked for a guy named George Behan, who you probably
absolutely
knew.
Legendary
columnist.
Yeah,
he was a legend. He was a legend in every possible way. He taught me how to drink, even though I grew up in a bar family. You know, George used to take me over to Earl's, and he taught me how to pad expense accounts, and you know, there were a whole slew of things.
More things we shouldn't be talking about on the radio.
But he taught me how to write, and he taught me how to think, and he taught me that my job was really to be there for the reader. And he also taught me, this is another thing, I was a chemistry major in college. I thought I was going to go to med school. I was accepted at a couple of med schools and didn't go. He taught me I could have a career in media. And I was very excited. By the time my fourth year, I thought I was going to go to work for Gannett. I thought I was going to stay there. But then I decided to go on to grad school at the Newhouse School. And I was part of a group called Sequence 20 at Syracuse University, doing graduate work in radio, TV, film, kind of with Todd did the same thing, but much, much later. So, yeah, you're right. It's almost 50 years ago.
You retired 3 years ago.
Yes.
And I was reading up this morning in bed on my iPhone, like a lot of people do, and which is why
that's why you have no battery.
We need content as we say in the morning, we need 7 a.m. posts.
Yes.
Because a lot of people are consuming their news that way. And you probably, how long have you been in Rochester, Todd?
Starting my 9th year.
Okay. So you know now. And I never, Tom and I met him the night we were inducted into the Communications Hall of Fame.
2001, yes.
That's the night I met him. And I bet you I've seen him maybe face-to-face three times since. But obviously with social media, you see each other all the time, right? But every single person I've talked to, and you probably can vouch about this guy, every former student loves him.
Yes.
So my question is, and what's the key, the secret to, before we talk about media, the secret to teaching, to
passion.
Get these kids?
It's passion. You have to have a passion for it, and you have to understand that for the most part, I had a real distinct advantage of also having an advertising career. So I taught at Fisher for 14 years, and then I left and I went to work for Time Warner. I was a VP of marketing and programming, did a lot of work in understanding, learning the game of marketing. I never took a marketing class in my life. And then afterward, I worked for an ad agency, and one of my clients was Monroe Community College. And that's why I ended up teaching at Monroe for a long period of time mm-hmm. in between. But something I learned about teaching along the
27
way.
27 years at Monroe, right?
27 at Monroe, right?
Wow.
Yeah, you're good, man. You can tell he's a freaking reporter. You know, these guys are good.
Is he your biographer, Tom?
Yeah, I think you might be.
I had Don Elhard in here a few weeks ago. And to think about, 50 years, you saw him, you've seen him your entire life.
I worked with him. I worked with him in the time between. I was at St. John Fisher, and I knew I was going over to Time Warner. And when I left, there was a part-time job open at Channel 13.
So passion.
It's all about passion. It's about walking in there and walking into a classroom and caring more about your students than you do about anything else in your life for the next 3 months. And I always would tell my students the first day, and they knew it, that for the next 3 months, it was going to be a mad love affair. I mean, Rich Jones was one of my students.
Our producer, yeah.
Yeah, he's taking care of us today, and Rich can tell you that. I'm passionate about my students and passionate about their success. And if they failed, I always felt like I failed. And I also realized that most of the teachers I had in high school, elementary school, and college were just mediocre. They weren't really passionate. They were not only not passionate about what they were doing, they were least of all passionate about me. One of the things I realized really early on was I was not a great teacher. But if I had passion and I cared enough and I could get you to come to my office and sit and spend some time and talk and find out who you are, we probably could figure out what you were going to do with your life and make you better for it and make you a little bit smarter about, about plotting things out. Because, again, one of the things I realized about my life was I stumbled into a lot of things, but most of the stumblings were things that I created. So we make our luck. I don't believe in luck.
Mm-hmm.
We make our luck. And we make our, therefore craft our futures. We build our personal brands, and then we go on from there. So my students, I've had 20,000 college students, and I'd like to think I probably remember 15,000 of them. And my wife is constantly astonished that I go to the public market, go to Park Ave, the Park Ave Fest today. I guarantee you I'll see at least 15 former students who will come up to me and tell me that I was their favorite teacher or one of their favorite teachers. And they'll look at my wife, and my wife will look at me, and she'll say, "Do you actually remember them?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you know what? For 3 months, they were my job." And in many cases, they were my job for 4 years at Fisher.
In a way, they become kind of like an extended family.
If you do it the way I did it, I'm just going to say it's not for everyone, because I think it's a high toll kind of way that I did
it. And you can't do it in a classroom with 300 kids. Obviously, you can't
right,
do it that way.
Right.
That's
one
of
the things
that drew me to Fisher.
That's one of the things I love about St. John Fisher.
Todd, let me ask you this, because he retired 3 years ago, and obviously he stays very relevant in what he's doing. Have you, in your 9 years, have you detected a change in the students in regard to, and I'll be specific and direct because that's the only way I do things, work ethic?
Do we have a few hours?
They want it easy. They want to know. But my point is, this guy gets kids to buy in to teaching and listening and learning. And if you can't do it as a teacher, I don't care if it's second grade or master's degrees, then you're not going to be effective. And I wonder sometimes in my dealings with some students, and I've said to them, your parents are paying a lot of money for you to be here. So it would really behoove you to listen and try to learn. But have you detected any changes in a decade or so?
Yeah, and I will answer that part of the question, and I'll play the teacher card and correct Mr. Proietti in the back of the room here. I don't think it's actually just passion that makes Tom so successful with all his students. It's that great Jerry Maguire line. The key to this business is personal relationships.
Well, it is really, and you're right.
Right?
That's personal.
And the passion is such an important part of that. I mean, that's the linchpin. But it's all those wonderful relationships you've cultivated.
And my students stay in my life. I mean, they don't go away. We were just having conversations about students who graduated 5, 10, 15
years. Well, social media is so great for that, right?
And it's perfect. It's like, you know, when Facebook came along, I even sent a note to Mark Zuckerberg at the time, and I said, I think you invented this for me. You know, this is because I also realized for me, Facebook is a teaching platform. And it was a place where I can still continue to teach without being in a classroom anymore because 2011, 2012, I really got to the point where I didn't want to be in a classroom anymore. I'd rather be skiing at Bristol, bowling, playing golf than anything else. But I still want to be able to have some contact with students and have some, you described it, it's personal relationships. So I really got to know them, got to like them, love them. I mean, I use the term love, and I really mean love. I'm passionate about their success.
But you can find out which kids are there for the grade and which kids are there to learn.
You know,
are there for both.
I have to say this. You know, I know where you're going with the work ethic thing. I taught for 45 years, and I continue to be involved with students. I think the student of today is the hardest working student I've ever seen in my life, and that's especially
222-1280 is our number. If you'd like to,
if you'd like to take me on, yes.
Argue that. Point.
I think it's a mixed bag at this point. It's hard to paint with across the board here how they are.
Here's what I try to tell students.
Let me say this about the Fisher students,
okay.
And especially Fisher communication students. They know that they want to be in this business. And when they get there, they also know that they look around the room, the first class that they're in, and you probably went through this even in the 90s. You look around the room and you realize, this is pretty stiff competition.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't perform at the highest possible level, I'm not going to make it. So you realize very quickly that, pardon me, you have to be really good at this at the game of education, and you have to be really good to make it in the field. Look at what you've done. I mean, you truly are something I put up on a Facebook post today. We're so proud of you as a person.
Who's he talking about?
Yeah, about you. Yeah. I mean, you're not just a great sports writer. You're a great writer. You are a vibrant personality. You're a person who has made the adaptation into going from print to multimedia, and you teach at our place, and your reviews from the classroom. The students I know, they come back and tell me who the good teachers are, and you're one of them.
Well, one thing I tell kids, and I'm not certainly, I'm a much better sports writer or writer than I am a teacher, but one thing I've tried to impress upon them is, I teach a sports writing class over there. In 3 months, I can't teach you how to be a writer. And I tell them that anybody that tells you that they've got writing mastered is lying to you, because writers are always evolving. And I tell them this. I said, you might end up, your writing level might be only at a C+ level or B- level when you get out of this course. I can't make you into a great writer. I can tell you and give you the foundation, but if you work hard and you show me that you've made a progress from being a D+ kid to all the way up to a B- kid, you might get an A in this course, because that's a heck of a jump. So if you show the capacity to learn and get better, that you might get the A, even though you're writing compared to the best kid in the course, it might not be able to compare. So that, to me, is the kid that's just in it for the grade can say, that's my way. Here's your carrot. You might just be in for the grade. So I want you to work hard. And in the meantime, they might figure out that they're good at it and they want to do it and they like doing it.
Right.
Because if you don't like doing something,
why do it?
Why do it? Exactly. And that's why I like being a writer. That's why I like teaching students, is because I enjoy it. And
it's the Ben and Jerry quote. We have it on our refrigerator in one of those little magnets. Ben and Jerry said, if it's not fun, why do it?
Right.
And I think that's one of the great options of living in the 20th and 21st century in the United States, is that we're some of the most blessed people in the world, that we actually have that option. And if that option is not being exercised, we know we've probably made a mistake. And that's one of the things I love about, you know, Todd's talking about personal relationships. I was counseling a Fisher graduate from 1991 yesterday, somebody I had in a class many, many years ago, telling her, you know what, the problem you're having right now is you're not doing the thing you really want to be doing. She's terrified at the possibility of taking a leap And I said, well, you should be much more terrified about the fact that you're going to go back to work at the place you don't like on Monday than taking the leap. Take the leap and, you know, it's like jumping out of an airplane. You know, and you hope the parachute's strong enough, and you hope you pull the cord. And I will
and
tell
if
you,
if it isn't, the paramedics better be good.
Well, after 45 years of teaching, I realized, I said this to Todd a little while ago, 45 years of teaching, any time I've ever seen anybody get laid off, fired, whatever it is, they always turn out for the best. Major job changes, whatever, they always turn out for the best, because one of the things that has happened to them is they've gotten locked in a place that probably is not healthy for them.
We're talking a lot about teaching. I want to take our first break, come back, and talk about the media. And I want to talk about the decision in the early 90s when everyone wanted to get their newspapers and news organizations on the Internet to not charge for content. And now there's, of course, the backlash of now we do charge for content. There's more than 450 newspapers or news organizations in the country now that are charging for content to get on their website and have a monthly, weekly, whatever subscriptions that weren't doing it 3 years ago. That's how quickly it's changed. And I always tell people, well, I'll shut up. Take a break. Come back. And I want to dive into this. I want to get your opinions on this. And I also want to get your opinions on what does the news industry have to do to recapture the people that just get on Facebook and read Facebook posts and get their news that way. Because we all know how stories can change if they're hearsay and rumors instead of coming from a viable news source. You're listening to The Word on the Street. The Word on the Street. My name is Jeff DeVeronica with the Democratic Chronicle. In-studio guests Tom Proietti and Todd Sedano right here on Fox Sports 1280.
Napa guy knows nothing beats the versatility of a 90s-era hatchback. You want trunk space? The whole thing is trunk space, giving you the ability to haul canoe-sized payloads with little more than a trusty old bungee cord holding down the hatch. And with over 400,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep your small utility vehicle running longer, stronger. Because it's not quirky, it's ahead of its time. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
Going on now at Guitar Center. It's the big payback. For every $50 you spend, we're giving you $10 in Guitar Center bucks, good towards a future purchase. That's right. We're paying you back up to 500 Guitar Center bucks. So come by and get hands-on with the gear you really want. From the best guitars, drums, keyboards, and amplifiers to the most state-of-the-art DJ, live sound, and recording gear. Because during Guitar Center's big payback weekend, the more you spend, the more you earn. In-store and GuitarCenter.com. Exclusions and limitations apply. Visit GuitarCenter.com for details.
News.
It's The Word on the Street, and the word this week is journalism and new media. We've talked a lot in the first segment with Tom Proietti, formerly of St. John Fisher College, actively still, and formerly with MCC's cast of thousands of careers in media in this town and other.
And can I throw one other in there? I still teach a class in London through Cayuga Community College the first 2 weeks in January, and I'll be teaching a digital photography class the first 2 weeks.
You teach it online is my guess, right?
No, I go to London. I've been to London 36 times in my life, and I absolutely love the city.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a charmed life.
Todd
Sedano.
And
if you met Donna, you would be so jealous of my life completely.
I see your life on Facebook, and I'm like, where is he now? What vacation is he taking now?
Oh, we're leaving soon. We're going to France.
God, his life is posted everywhere. There are updates every second.
Yeah, I feel sorry for my wife, who's a very private person.
She's not anymore.
You notice I don't say much about her, and when I don't say her name often. So
that's Todd Sedano, associate professor at St. John Fisher College, which is my alma mater. But I want to ask Tom, you know, you've been through all the changes in the media industry. You've been a part of it. You've commented on it. Let's go back to the 90s. Because I know I was puzzled when we wanted to get on the Internet that we didn't charge for content,
right?
The Democratic Chronicle. And I don't think any news media did then.
No.
Did you find that strange?
The only one who did from day one is the Wall Street Journal. But the Wall Street Journal realized that they had pretty much a captive audience. Part of the problem was the first couple of news organizations that really bought into the web, and one of them was the Washington Post. They bought into the web, and they bought into the web and gave the content away because they thought that if I gave you the content for free, your eyeballs are going to be right next to an ad. and that was going to work, and that they never saw the demise of the print edition. They thought you would be using this as an interactive thing during the day, and that it would be a completely supplementary medium. They didn't see the possibility of people like me. You know, they didn't see the iPad coming or the iPhone coming, and
right.
The iPad came along, and you know, I hate to tell you this, but I haven't. You know, I'm looking at a print edition that's sitting in front of you. The only time I see a print edition is if I walk into the library at St. John Fisher or you know my Irondequoit library.
Well, at the end of the racks at Wegmans have a few of those things too.
Even there, I don't notice them. I see them. You know, yesterday Todd and I were having a cup of coffee at Starbucks, and I look over and it's like looking at a vestigial organ. It doesn't exist.
But here's
anymore.
The irony, and this is I mentioned this during a break, and I'll mention is that, and this has been the big challenge for newspapers is. The advertising revenue from the print edition still dwarfs what they can get online, and that's been the big million-dollar question, more than a million, for newspapers across the country. It's how do we get
billion-dollar
the advertisers
right.
to pay the same for the Internet? And I'm after 20 years, I'm convinced that they can't, which is why I think the print edition, from a revenue standpoint, is extraordinarily viable.
I think it is too, and I don't think it's going to go away. You know, 100%. I think it's going to end up in the hands of maybe 10% of readers.
I have a crazy suggestion.
Please do.
I'm wondering if the lifestyles we all lead now, it would be better, or at least a smart attempt to try it, to go back to being an afternoon edition.
I think timing is less important than access. But I think that's a whole other question. I would love to hear Todd's take.
I just think everybody's on their phone in the morning and on their tablet. And
I think there's also much of your readership is probably waiting for that newspaper to arrive on their doorstep every morning. And then, I mean, you're changing behaviors.
Yes.
You'd be telling someone. I mean, people.
But I'm wondering if the behavior's already been changed.
And that's a good point, too.
I'm wondering if the person that gets home at 5:30... If we could have fresher content on the newsstands at 4 o'clock in the afternoon
right.
and on your doorsteps at 4 o'clock, then maybe they'll want to sit down with the paper in the evening and not watch the TV news.
I think one of the things being
that's
left out
that's my crazy
of,
theory.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting theory. One of the things that's being left out of the conversation is I know in my house we subscribe to not just the Democrat and Chronicle. We subscribe to the Wall Street Journal. We subscribe to the New York Times. We subscribe to the Washington Post. I have Entertainment Weekly and Time. And I have so many other news media forms on my iPad and on my iPhone, and much more likely to read on my iPad, is that I find there's such a huge panorama of news availabilities. Plus, I also you said, you know, my life is on Facebook. Well, it's not just my life is on Facebook. It's news is on Facebook. And, I know Karen Magnuson, one day I said to her, I was on the radio with her.
Our executive editor.
Many years ago.
Yep.
And I said to Karen, Evan Dawson asked me the question. He said, so what is someone like you, who's the media scholar, quotes around that, how do you get your news in the morning? And the first thing I look at is Twitter. And that kind of shocked Karen. And I said, well, my Twitter feed's actually the single most important source of news for me. And it never stops. It doesn't turn off.
Absolutely.
So I woke up 2 o'clock this morning, and the first thing I do is look at my Twitter feed. I want to know what's going on in the world. I look for the hashtags and the moments and what's really going on in the world. And then for depth, I revert to news organizations. I won't even say print media anymore because I'm not sure that they're even viable any longer completely as print media. They're news they're exactly what the DNC just did in the rebranding process.
Digital news organization. Yep.
And
there are people
that
think that we have a whole separate organization.
I know.
Now.
You're exactly right.
They think that, are you still working with the DNC or are you with DNC Digital?
Digital.
I'm like, yes.
Yes. Yeah. But, that's an important point about how do you educate the community when the community doesn't necessarily care where it comes from. You and I and Todd care about that. We have to teach that to our students. You have to live by it. You're just telling me about, what a shortage of space you have on your phone. Do you ever think that would be a problem in your professional
career? Well,
it's
because I have a video. I'm waiting to produce and edit my video that has all my clips from my phone.
What year did you start at the DNC?
92. Three.
Okay. Did you ever think you'd be shooting video on a phone?
No, it's ironic, and this is what I tell students. What's ironic is I learned skills in college on TV and radio production and delivering the message that were dormant in my life for 15 years, maybe longer.
Right.
And now they've come back into play. And if you're a young person out there, first of all, you have to be passionate. You have to want this. You have to be willing to pay your dues. And it's like this in a lot of industry, and this is one thing that does turn me off about the younger generation, is they want to go work for Sports Illustrated immediately.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, if you're good,
I think
that might
cool.
be your second job. I love the ambition.
I love the ambition.
But you got to be good, and you need absolutely. To learn how to write a news story.
No, the problem with that is if they don't get that as their second job, then they fold up their tent and go home. And think, well, I was given a bag or a bill of goods by.
See, I don't see that. I don't see that at all, though. The students I know rebound from it very quickly and go find the niche that they fit, and that's wonderful. That's exactly where you should be. You know, I did that all during my career.
I tell them that people still want to. A lot of people want to read the news. More than ever before. You have more access to content right. and more people delivering the news,
and more people,
organizations.
More people reading words than we've ever had in history.
So you just have to find out how it's going to be delivered to them.
And it's being delivered in so many ways.
Right.
I mean, one of the things that you see over and over again in the literature about our industry that maybe you don't see, but Todd and I see it, is that a company like Facebook wants to own your attention. They want to own every single bit of your attention. So what are they doing right now? For news organizations, you know, most folks out there who are using Facebook have no idea that Facebook pays the New York Times for content. So if I take an article from the New York Times, a review of Seinfeldia that Todd and I shared the other day,
mm-hmm.
the great book about the Seinfeld series, I put that review from the New York Times on Facebook, and Facebook paid the New York Times probably something like 8 cents. To put that there. And then every time anyone clicks on that content, the New York Times gets paid again. So there's an incestuous, a new model that's working there that most of us have no idea about, that's kind of left the advertiser off to the side. Because for years with newspapers, as you well know, when you first started working in a newspaper, you knew the news hole 3-4 days ahead.
Oh, yeah.
You knew, and what we mean by the news, can you explain the news?
How much space you have in the paper to put the news versus the advertising?
And how much? What percentage of the newspaper is advertising, the print edition? It's probably 80%.
Yeah.
So it used to be the advertiser.
Especially on the weekend.
And it used to be the advertiser called the shots, and that's no longer true. So we've changed the game, and we're not quite sure how we can change the rules to keep the game interesting. And more importantly, for companies like Gannett and everyone else, iHeart, it doesn't make any difference what it is, how do we keep it profitable? Because they have to make a profit. And I was telling Todd, iHeart is a company that's been struggling trying to figure out where radio fits in this great grand media landscape, because it's not an easy thing to figure out.
We're talking with Tom Praetti. He's a... Emeritus, what are we? You're the emeritus
resident scholar in media
at St. John Fisher College,
professor emeritus at MCC.
Yeah. and also an associate professor at Fisher is Todd Sedano. We're talking with him about media, where it was, where it is, where it's going. I want to talk to you next segment. We're going to take a break now on page views and audience driving the message, because back in the day when I got in this business. The newspaper, the news organization, we were the gatekeeper. We were the one that told you what was important. Now, all those people that are clicking on the story or the video, they're telling you what's important. And the news media has to follow that to a degree. We'll talk about that on the other side. We welcome your calls if you want to weigh in on this topic. 222-1280 is our number. You're listening to The Word on the Street on Fox Sports 1280.
Lily Tomlin will receive the SAG Lifetime Achievement Award. The Actors Union said it will honor the 76-year-old at its annual show next year. The comedian has also recently received the Kennedy Center Award and the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. Seth Rogen joined frequent collaborators James Franco and Paul Rudd in New York City for a special screening of their new animated comedy, Sausage Party.
Prepare yourself, little sausage. You're about to learn the terrible truth.
In the spoof, Rogen stars as a sausage who is horrified to discover what really happens to food after it leaves the supermarket.
We found that The Secret Life of Food actually offered us a lot of opportunities to really draw parallels between our own kind of problems and food's problems.
Rogen also co-wrote the script. The movie opens next week. UNICEF released video of Ewan McGregor's recent trip to a refugee camp in northern Iraq. The Star Wars actor was there to highlight the dangers facing children because of the conflict in Iraq and Syria. And the White House is staying quiet on which celebrities will attend President Obama's 55th birthday bash tonight. Many speculate the guest list will include A-listers such as Beyonce and Oprah, who were at the First Lady's 50th birthday party 2 years ago. That's your Eye on Entertainment. Chris Martinez, CBS News, Los Angeles.
We're back on the Word on the Street. My name is Jeff DeVeronica. I write for the Democratic Chronicle, and I produce videos for the Democratic Chronicle. Do a lot of things with the Democratic Chronicle. I haven't delivered a paper yet, though, in 20-plus years.
We could change that.
We could change that. If you don't get your paper, call the station.
Tomorrow morning, you and I are going out delivering.
Tom Proietti is here from St. John Fisher College and MCC, and he's retired, but he's still very active in the media world today. He's the guy you see on the news a lot when they look for someone to talk about media trends. Tom is the guy. Also with us is an associate professor at St. John Fisher, geared more toward television and the history of it and the future of it, Todd Sedano in media production. He's here, too. Page views. I watched this thing. This guy presented this speech he gave at the Poynter Institute, and he said that what fractured us in media, the internet will now save us, in that newspapers need to listen to their readers and the audience will drive where we go and what we cover. And I can tell you that we certainly are looking at that at the Democratic Chronicle daily, hourly. We have tools that will track how many people are in the story right now. I could pull it up on my phone and show you how many people are in a story right now. I had a story posted about Olympian, our local local Olympians this morning. I can get down there and tell you. And they're not only tracking how many page views we get per story, but a very key element to this, and you mentioned it last segment, is engagement time.
Yes.
Why is engagement time so important to news organizations?
Because,
now,
you know, it's back to that thing about passion. It's drawing me into, it's creating that relationship, the thing that Todd talked about. If you can engage me, if you can bring me into the relationship so that I feel like I have a relationship with you, which I do. And this morning, actually, what I did is I posted two pieces from the DNC that I thought were absolutely exquisite. I don't know if you saw these, but I share them on all social media. David Andriotta's piece.
Yeah,
and
I
Sal Majorana's piece about E.J. Manuel.
Yeah.
That was fabulous. It was some great storytelling, and it was highly engaging. And one of the things I saw, as soon as I put it up on Twitter, about 9 people retweeted it, and as soon as I put it on Facebook,
shares
a whole slew of comments that came through, and that's exactly what we should be looking for. Now, the terrifying thing about the proposition that you just said, and I'd love to hear Todd's response and your response to this, is do we really want the audience dictating content?
Short answer is no.
In the world of journalism, absolutely no way. Right, because they're going to drive us someplace else.
They're going to drive us to the guy picking his nose on
or
the
maybe,
sideline.
Right, they may be, right, exactly. Sports Center. They're going to drive us off a cliff.
Or the accident that has a horrific scene that we got the picture of it. So some of the, for lack of a better term, gawker aspect of journalism is sadly what, and so people slow down to watch an sneer and accident.
And that'll
scene.
Never go away. Yeah, and so should we play that.
No, but it could only get worse if what you're saying is happening.
If we're feeding the beast.
If we're feeding the beast.
Right.
If
yes.
we're saying
so that you need to strike that balance, essentially, right. What it is. But what my theory is, and this is, again, the delicate balance that you're trying to weigh in journalism, and I don't think there's anything that anybody above me at the newspaper would sing anything differently, is we need to find ways to make sure, with a smaller staff, to keep our website churning with stories, be it a 5-paragraph story or a 50-paragraph story, while also being able to detach ourselves and work on special projects. For example, now this is long form. Long form has now become a very big thing. People are reading long form, and what the difference of that is
explain long form. So that
long form is it's like reading a chapter of a book on your phone, yes, or on your iPad.
Or reading the Sports Illustrated article.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's really in-depth.
It's in-depth. Obviously, we call it long-form, so it's in-depth. But the way it is presented makes it more readable. It's like chapters of a book. So it's going to want to make you read on. Now, this morning we posted something. It was this morning or last night. Sarah Taddeo did this fantastic piece. And the headline's great, too. And, again, how we talk about what pulls you in, not just the photos, not just that there's a little video triangle. Desperate to detox.
Yes.
Immediately, I love the alliteration. What is that about? And it's about people addicted to heroin or opioids.
It's a brilliant piece of work.
It is. And Sarah found people that were willing to open up and tell those stories. And she shares that and how people got off the streets and got off drugs. How one mother basically duped her daughter into going for a sex call at a McDonald's. And then the mother had the police ready to bust her for sex trafficking,
yes,
and that got, and her mother wanted to do this because she was, it was this sex thing, it was drugs, it was all rolled into this one big bad mess, and it saved her daughter's life, she thinks. So that's a long form on our website.
And
when
I think,
did the Dan Elhart thing, it was long form.
And on your trending pieces this morning, it was Sarah's story is the number one story, and
top stories, you'll say that.
And what I'm doing there strategically for me as, because I think I'm, quote, an opinion leader, and that's not being egotistical. That's just the nature of who I am.
The number of followers you have, yeah.
What I do then is I kind of save it for the right timing, because I think what I was doing this morning, I grabbed, David Andreotta's piece, which was, I thought, was so fantastic.
For now, Tony Dees is Frankie Eyes, because the Monroe County Public Administrator is running Tony Dees.
Unbelievable.
They had no wills.
Unbelievable story.
And I can tell you right now that there are, right now, that is the top story for people reading right now.
It's spectacular. And it's not just a great story. David has put it together. This is David Andreotta, who is truly a gifted reporter, writer, columnist, whatever. And he packages it in such a way that just leaves you in astonishment, for one thing, and outraged at the same time. It's like, how could we let this be happening on our watch?
And the Monroe County Public Administrator, he's making $2,000 a week.
A week.
For 4 weeks, for about 4 weeks. So it's definitely interesting. Todd, what's going to save newspapers? What news organizations? I shouldn't say. I think there'll always be a Democrat Chronicle. In what form? I don't know. Maybe there might just, one day I think there will be. Maybe not in my lifetime, though. I think there's too much advertising revenue from the print edition to just say bye-bye to it. But I think there'll always be. What do you think will save? I think the storytelling we're talking about, that's my thing. We have to tell those stories.
I agree, but that's not going to answer your question, which is, how are you going to save newspapers? How are you going to save journalism? I think what won't save newspapers, what won't save journalism, is that arrogance/certitude that this is our fix. Let's have clicks tell us what is necessary for us to go in the direction that we're going.
So you're saying exactly the opposite of this guy from that spoke at this Pointer conference to a whole bunch of executives.
I didn't see the conference.
No, I know.
I'm judging by what you said.
Yeah.
Anything that explains with such, again, arrogance and certitude that this is where we're going, and we have to jump on board, otherwise we're going to be left behind, I think that's dangerous.
He said the audience will tell us what we need to cover.
Steve Jobs said it's not the customer's job to know what they want, right? Let's not rely on the the average person.
Todd is so spot on there, and that's one of the things that terrifies me about something like Facebook, is we are allowing some people on social media to control the content, and they're not necessarily good guides. No differently than, frequently I look at something like, an outrageous publication like the New York Post. The New York Post is largely garbage. I mean, it's just trash. But it's driving a lot of eyeballs, and it's changing a lot of minds, and we have to temper that because there's a whole slew of other people who, you know, the opinion leaders who read the New York Post who are taking that and then applying their little spin on social media, and they gather followers like crazy. So along comes the New York Post starts, and then somebody like Breitbart shows up right behind them and maybe in some ways becomes even more powerful. And that's a terrifying model. And back to the Steve Jobs quote, if Apple had sat and waited for the readers to, or their audience to tell them what it is we needed, we would still be working with those little Apple computers that had the slide-in disc.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
We wouldn't have an iPhone.
And we're in this era now, we were talking about this earlier, Tom, of this cultural fragmentation where we can have outlets for people who are interested in more of the right-wing approaches to politics, to media, to everything. The New York Post, the Wall Street Journal, Breitbart, Drudge Report.
Fox.
Yeah. Fox, right? Yep. That list goes on. Same thing on the other end of the spectrum.
Yes. MSNBC.
I have a lot of friends that aren't on Twitter, and I said that's where I go. If there's a breaking news story, or I'm just like, have I missed anything in the last 2 hours when I've been detached watching my daughter do something, that's where I go. That's where I go.
And the other side of that, though, is I'm married to a person who would never be on Twitter. And when I tell her all the things she's missing on Twitter or on Facebook or whatever, she'll say, no, I'm not, because you tell me about them. And she said, and I don't go through any of the stress or strain you do of having to continually be checking your phone. And she's continually checking her phone with friends.
Is it stress or strain to you? Or it's just...
Well, you know, I don't know any different. You know, because I've always think at at 17 years old, I was in a newsroom. At 17 years old, I got the bug.
Right, there's an adrenaline,
and there is an adrenaline rush that I don't want ever to go away. And this year I cannot wait. I hope to be working in a newsroom either at Channel 13 or XXI or maybe at your place.
We have a TV studio now.
I know you do.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Have you seen it yet?
I came for the tour.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
And it's fabulous.
Well, you want to comment on the election coverage?
Yeah, maybe even not. I don't even have to comment. I just want to be there. I want to be in the newsroom.
They'll pay you nothing if you're just going to show up to watch.
Well, I don't even care if I get paid. You know, I'm at the point in my life where that part of the
God bless you.
That part of the proposition is different for you and me because I'm retired and I've done very well and I don't really have to worry about that. I'm so still glad, and this is something Todd and I were talking about earlier as well, that I still have the bug. What I don't have the passion for is walking into a classroom, grading papers, and doing that because I'd have to trade off a whole bunch of other things that I've discovered are just as important, if not more important.
Golf. Like golf.
Yeah, golf and travel and grandbabies.
Eating.
And eating, yes. I ate so much. I probably ate 8,000 calories last night
at my
friend's house.
Go ahead.
The bug that Tom's talking about, though, respectfully, does not apply to the general population.
No, it does not.
You guys are in such a minority of people who have that bug, who eat, drink, bleed news, and find out what's going on in the world around us.
You're not one of those guys.
He's not one of those.
You just call you guys.
So can you, what's your
Jews guys.
Jews guys, yeah.
You talk in Jersey now.
I'm sorry, use guys.
Use guys. Hey, Di Veronica.
So what's your perspective of people like Jeff and me who are constantly on social media? I watch him and even Rich, who's in here. He's a junkie. There's a junkie on the other side of that glass.
Our producer,
Rich, he's all over the place.
I say better use guys than me. And the first place I go to in the morning to check my news is actually the New York Post. Not because I like their politics. I'm actually on the other end of that pendulum. It's the sports section's wonderful. And I know I'm going to get some good
news. Yeah. And that's my older
brother,
Pat. I was set
to throw down here with the guy wearing the Baltimore Orioles t-shirt.
New York Post? Really?
Oh, sure.
Listen to that.
I'm a daily news guy.
You just insulted him.
I'm a daily news guy. Lupica's my cousin.
Is that true?
He's his mom and my mom are sisters.
I have no idea.
I didn't know that.
The second place I look is the New York Daily News.
Okay, thank you.
When do you start looking at the DNC and Jeff DeVeronica?
Well, I'm not right about the Mets.
We need Jeff to be writing
out
checks
to
St. Joe.
Mets guy? Oh, sorry, I didn't see that.
Please.
The reporter didn't know those details. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, because they're
Yankees
even worse
for the
by the way, just for the radio audience, yes, Yankees for
Yankees.
The record.
Well, that's obvious. You're a Red Sox fan.
If you're a Mets guy, or a Red Sox fan, yeah.
All right, we'll take our last break. And then I want to, something popped into my head because...
That's
dangerous. It's not journalism, and it's certainly, but it is video related, and I just want to just tease it this way. Do you know what unboxing toy videos are?
I don't, but
you don't?
I hope you'll hear about it after the break.
Because there's part of me that says, if I quit my job and just concentrated on showing videos of my daughter opening toys and playing with toys, I could make millions.
Yes.
Unbelievable, Todd. This is a whole... Trust me, when you have kids someday, have the iPhone with a lot of space and make video. I'm not even kidding. We'll take a last break. It just gets me worked up because these people are maybe exploiting their kids. I don't know. We'll talk on the other side.
Stars, two thumbs up. No matter how you say it, these blockbusters make all the critics happy. It's Billy's blockbuster event at Fusillo Kia, and the plot to this one is simple. Shop here, save huge. Like the 2016 Kia Sedona for zero down, $299 a month. MSRP is $29,640 at zero down, $299 a month right now on the 2016 Kia Sedona right here at Fusillo Kia of Greece. If you want to check out the selection, you can log on to FusilloKiaGreece.com. If you want to apply for financing, log on to HugeKiaCredit.com. Select the Greece location. You are on your way to the financing you deserve. Then come shop us 7 days a week this August during Billy's Blockbuster event. It's huge.
36-month, 30,000-mile lease, 10,000 miles per year, 20 cents per mile over my limit, 8% tax, zero due at signing. First monthly payment of $299, $595 acquisition fee plus tax, tags, and DMV fees included in payment structure. $5,000 key lease cash applied. $400 disposition fee, no early termination fee. No security deposit required. Offer with approved credit through Kia Motor Finance. Prior sales excluded to dealer for details. Pricing available for August 1st, 2016 through August 31st, 2016.
A refreshing place to buy a used car. Truly outstanding service. Stunning, pristine used cars. That's what we hear from our customers. For over 30 years, Patrick's Used Car Supercenter in Henrietta has sold over 20,000 cars with no gimmicks and no rough high-mile rental cars. Over 1,000 online reviews tell it all.
Go too far off the rails, but unboxing toys on YouTube. If you're a parent, I bet you we would get calls. If I like solicited calls for this, I would get calls because
yes,
parents tape their kids playing with toys, record them on their iPhones or iMovie, whatever they do with their iPad, and then they put it online, and then you can monetize your YouTube videos. I actually we picked up on a couple. My daughter found this that I can see they're just starting to do this. They're starting to put their kids playing with toys on YouTube. And you can monetize your videos. If you get, I think the number is over 100,000 views. Then you say monetize, okay, in your settings, monetize. Then YouTube will then ask you to pay. Well, can we put advertising on your videos? And then you make something like 8 cents per view.
Per view, right? Especially.
But there are people who are millionaires.
And if you're skilled enough at making these videos, YouTube will let you use their space.
Yes.
Out in California.
Oh, absolutely.
But I'm telling you that it's not even skilled to do what they're doing.
Oh, the stuff is mostly garbage.
Yeah.
It's so easy to do, but it also shows you that there's this whole new landscape of content that most of us thought were trivial parts of our lives that turn out to be highly monetizable
absolutely.
Things. And again, back to news organizations. Take the New York Times, the Democrat and Chronicle. Take Gannett as a group. I mean, that's the largest.
Why don't the DNC just create their own YouTube channel where all of our videos go?
I think that's going to happen.
And then we monetize through YouTube.
Just think about what's at.
Just think about
what's at Gannett, though. Right now at Gannett, and this is not a criticism, it's just a fact of life, is mostly a group of people from the top on down.
Mm-hmm.
Of print people who haven't thought yet in those video terms. Now, Gannett does have a great broadcasting division, and I think the two things are, as you well know, those things are split apart. But they're split apart in strategically, and that's mostly for the stock market. But the other side of it is strategically inside the company. They are looking at, okay, how do we put all these things together to monetize off of every platform? Because it's the DNC Digital. DNC
right.
Digital doesn't mean print. It means every possible platform we can, every possible way we can to deliver information, every possible way we can to make money.
So that's my light bulb moment today is that we should aggregate all of our DNC videos
absolutely.
Into one YouTube channel.
Sure.
And then monetize via YouTube.
I just did a consulting job.
And these people with 6 million views for their kids opening up an Ariel or Cinderella princess toy.
I thought Jeff's light bulb moment was he's leaving journalism for good, and he's just going to do unboxing videos forever.
He thinks
and
it's
ever.
Funny.
Well, it's,
if I dedicated the amount of time that I do to my Democrat and Chronicle job
you'd be a
to unboxing toys with my daughter, now she's about to turn three, so she's getting
perfect age,
right to where she because she can speak about it and talk about it, and oh look at daddy, look at this, look at. It's a whole other industry.
So you can coach her, right? You're coaching the actor
there
on screen.
No, the parents coach a little bit, absolutely, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But it's unbelievable.
Here's what concerns me. If you're going to draw a parallel then to journalism and news gathering organizations, I think the parallel then is not you guys hosting your videos at the DNC on a YouTube channel. It's getting users to generate that content because that's what's happening here. The people who are using those products are doing the dirty work.
But they're not going to let us use it because they're going to make money off it.
I was going to say, the user in this particular case becomes a competitor.
Right.
Exactly.
And for every one of us, you know, this used to be one of my favorite things to ask college students when the first week they came in. Do you know how many hours there are in a week? Most human beings have no idea how many hours there are in a week. If you started...
7 times 24.
Okay.
168.
Okay, 168. If you knew how many hours you had in a week and you started actually valuing that time and allocating it to the things you want to do, you realize it's really finite. Because one of the first things that happens is 56 of it to 60 is probably being slept away.
Right. Yep.
And then a whole bunch of it's being wasted.
Boy, it seems so short.
Yes, it is short. And so the competition for eyeballs and attention and screen time and whatever, and engagement, I mean, there's the real key. The competition for engagement is monstrous.
If you're watching the TV show Mr. Robot on USA Network.
Oh, my God, isn't that amazing?
There's the character who devotes only 3 minutes of conversation to whoever she or he is talking to at the moment.
That's it. Yeah, we have to recommend Mr. Robot.
This was speaking of robots, I tweeted this out this morning. It's interesting. The Washington Post has created they're using it. They're going to have an automated robot that's going to tweet out every result for the Olympic Games.
Yes.
And that's going to be on their Twitter feed. Constantly.
Yeah.
Now, the robot's doing this. They're not doing it. And somebody on Twitter, I saw, or Facebook, a comment about how you're trying to eliminate the sports writer. I'm like, no, you're not.
No.
You're not trying to eliminate the sports writer. You're actually trying to make the sports writer give him or her a break to concentrate on something that's more important than just the scores. How did they win the game? How did they lose the game? So instead of me trying to tweet during a Syracuse basketball game all
exactly
these updates,
right.
The robot can do it.
Right.
And then I can look in Jim Boeheim's eyes, look in the player's eyes, and look at the strategy and analyze the way I used to before I had to worry about tweeting all the updates. It's actually will help journalist of today.
Talk about a teachable moment. This is it. This is it right here. This is, and again, one of the things that I say passionately is at some point we're going to be teaching this level of media literacy at every level of education in the United States. Starting with preschool, because by the time they're in preschool, and even when they're sitting at home, if we aren't teaching them, we've already lost them. And we're way too far behind. I'm sure your 3-year-old daughter is more media literate than most 3-year-olds, simply because you're in the business.
Mm-hmm.
She's got to be. And you probably are doing a lot of great coaching with her. But when she goes to kindergarten, or if she goes to preschool...
Couple months.
It's not going to work because they're not teaching media literacy. We're the only industrialized nation in the world that doesn't teach media literacy.
We have 90 seconds. I will tell you this. You know, we let her watch some of these YouTube videos with kids playing with toys, or we watch some of these women who dress up as princesses and then they act out these scenes. I think my daughter's vocabulary, because of these, is better than some other kids who don't watch these. Now, we don't let her sit there for 6 hours a day, but will she spend on average maybe 30 minutes a day at different points of the day watching some sort of video, be it Bubble Guppies or whatever.
Right.
Yes. And I think because of that, she said something the other day. She goes, Daddy, that's super cool. I've never said that. She got it from somebody on YouTube
and
that said this thing is super cool.
Old,
no. So
that's astonishing.
It is. It's weird. It's in, if we go to a restaurant, she's in Lansing. Well, do you want to watch your phone for a few minutes?
Yeah.
So there's 7 minutes where we're trying to wrap up the So is it bad parenting? Call me a bad parent. She's learning vocabulary.
You're not a bad parent.
All right.
You're a realist.
I'm sorry we talked about YouTube so much in the last 10 minutes, but I do find it fascinating.
The future of media is so much of it's in that video thing.
It is. It is. Tom, thanks for coming in.
A great pleasure, Jeff.
Todd, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'd love to do this again sometime. So
I'm here.
All right.
I'm here until September 28th.
for our producer, Rich Jones. For these two gentlemen, my name is Jeff DeVeronica of the Democratic Chronicle. 24/7, democraticchronicle.com. We'll talk to you again next week right here on The Word on the Street.